Does anybody need a class material for, it'll say Joshua 3 through 5. Does anybody need material for that? Okay. So it looks like we're all good there then. If you want to go ahead and open your Bibles to Joshua 3, we'll start looking there here in just a second. You know, we had said that chapters 1 through 5 is where the children of Israel... I got to move this. The children of Israel would... This is where they're preparing to take the land. And... we saw that in chapter 1 that God charges Joshua and that he charges the people or the leaders that to cross the Jordan. So we see that they were going to cross the Jordan, and Joshua sent out two spies, and these two spies they kind of formed an alliance with Rahab the harlot. They entered into an agreement. And we also saw that this was a conditional agreement. And now we're going to kind of look at some things that we see in Joshua 3 through 5. In Joshua 3 is where they're going to cross the Jordan. So in these chapters 3 through 5, kind of broke it down into six sections. In chapter 3, in verses 1 through 5, the sons of Israel prepare to set out from Shittim and cross the Jordan. And then in verses 6 through 17, we see them crossing the Jordan. And then once you get into chapter 4, in verses 1 through 24, you see them setting up these memorial stones. These memorial stones to remember the crossing of the Jordan. And then in chapter 5, in the first 9 verses, you have this new generation that is circumcised. In verses 10 through 12, they have the first Passover in Canaan. And then in 13 through 15... we see this section that speaks about a captain of the host of the Lord. So who is this? And we'll look at that too and see some things that we can maybe learn a little bit about that. So that's kind of how we've broken down these sections. We'll have 6 different sections that we'll look at. So in chapter 3, starting here, they're preparing to cross the Jordan. And I put on the lesson, what is to guide them according to verses 3 and 4? What's to guide them in this crossing? Okay, the Ark of the Covenant. So the officers said to the people that they were to do something when they saw the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and when they saw the Levitical priests carrying it. It said to set out from your place and go after it. So when they see this, they're to set out from their place and go after it. And then in the end of verse 4, it says that you may know the way by which you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. So, and the way they're going to pass, really nobody's done that before, but not here. So we see that they're to take up and follow after the ark. So why is that? Who is behind this? So Let's turn over to 1 Samuel, and we'll kind of build some thoughts on that first. In 1 Samuel 4, I listed verses 1 through 9. We're not going to read all those verses. But there's something at least we can learn about the ark here. So what will this tell us about the ark? We see here that it isn't, or we're going to see here when we read some of this, that it's not the ark that gives the success. Okay, it's not the ark itself. So if you kind of, we'll jump around a little bit right here. In verse 3, they say, you know, this is after Israel was defeated by the Philistines. And they say, why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? So, first of all, and this is something we're going to see when we get into Joshua 7 as well. When they were defeated by Ai, it was kind of quick to blame God, if you will. Why has God done this? But and as we know from that one, that it wasn't God. It was because of what Achan had done, and then so God wasn't with them. They didn't have His favor. So here we see that they're defeated. And they kind of, in the next verse, they kind of have a plan. You know, it's like, well, that's okay. Yeah, we've been defeated, but we know how to win this. So in verse 4, it says, so the people, well, let's go to verse 3, I'm sorry. So when the people came into the camp, the elders of Israel said, why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that it may come among us and deliver us from the power of our enemies. So they have a plan. They've already been defeated. Evidently, we see the Lord wasn't with them on this, and so their plan is, well, we'll fix this. We know what to do. We're going to go get the ark. So, and we will see where that leads them. But in verses 1, just kind of to give us a little idea of where they're at. In verses 1, it talks about how the Philistines were camped beside Ebenezer. Israel was camped by Ebenezer, and the Philistines were camped by Aphek. So, if I got my map this way, Aphek was over here by the Great Sea. And then you had Ebenezer, and then you have Shiloh over here. So they're over here, and they're going to come to Shiloh, and they're going to get the Ark of the Covenant, and so that they can win. But let's read on. So yeah, they have a plan. They know how they're going to win this thing, and so they get the Ark, and Israel is excited. I mean, verse 5 talks about this great shout. And verse 6 even says that the Philistines hear it and it's like, oh no. You know, we know what that means. And God has, or they have the ark. And verse 7 said that God, they stated that God has come into the camp. But verse 10 says that Israel was defeated. And then the Philistines take the ark. So, question is it the ark that gives the success? Or who is it that gives success? Okay? God gives us success. And when we're, you know, we saw kind of back in chapter 1 where it started off talking about it, obeying the law and stuff. And which we'll see some more of that again. We'll talk about, like I just said, in chapter 7 when we talk about Ai and Achan's sin. But that's kind of my point. It's the God of the Ark of the Covenant. It's this God that makes things possible. It's not the Ark itself. It's, you know, it's more than that piece of furniture, if you will. Now, but we did see this is to lead the way. We see that. We're going to see that in different verses here. But the difference is, in these different verses, it's why while they are in favor of the Lord, or while they're doing things as they should. And, you know, again, I'm bringing up Ai, but that's what we will notice there. That was the problem with that, is because not following instructions. That's what caused it. It wasn't that God was not able or anything like that. It's just that, you know, they violated that, and that was, you know, their punishment. God was not with them. So the people were told to follow the ark. I'm back in chapter 3 now. Sorry. And as the priest carried it. And this would lead the way. And as we just said, that's what God is the one that would allow or give success. I just put some notes, all my notes, just to something to just keep in the back of your mind. But the ark is referenced several times in several different chapters here in Joshua. In chapter 5, it's referenced in 5 chapters. In chapter 3, the chapter that we're in right now, it makes reference to it 8 times. And then in chapter 4, it's going to make reference to it 7 times. And then in chapter 6, we're going to see it 8 times again. And then I think it was 1 time each in chapter 7 and chapter 8. So just showing how that, you know, this part that the ark is playing in some of these things that we're reading about. Some of the things that are taking place that are going on here. So in Joshua 3, that's why it looked funny. That was Samuel 3. Joshua 3. There we go. So in Joshua 3, 5, Joshua tells the people to consecrate themselves, because tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. They're about to see something tomorrow, the power of God. Now, not that that's something they haven't seen, but so Joshua tells the people to consecrate themselves. Now, so here we get to the point, the sons of Israel, they cross the Jordan, or they're about to cross the Jordan. Now consider what God did in order for the people to cross. So in verse 6, it says, Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over ahead of the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went ahead of the people. And then verse 8, command the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And then we can jump down to verse 11. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over ahead of you. And as we read some of these things, I mean, consider what it's describing, what's being done, what's taking place. And there's also a similar reference in 4:18 as well. But these wonders that they see, that Israel is witnessing, and others might hear of, and all these things that are taking place are showing the might of this living God. So, and God also uses this to show Israel something. In verse 7, said, "Now the Lord said to Joshua, 'This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, and they may know that just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you.'" And similar in 10, "And Joshua said, 'By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will assuredly dispossess from before you the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Hivite, or the Hivite, Perizzite, Girgashite, the Amorite, and the Jebusite.'" So we see God is with them, and he also exalts Joshua. You know, he shows that he is the chosen, that Joshua is the one that was chosen to lead these people, and that he is with him just as he was with Moses. So we can see this through these verses here. Now, I stated on there, what does God say he's going to accomplish with these wonders, according to verse 7, and I kind of answered my own question. I got ahead of myself. But if we look over at chapter 4, we can also see this in 4:14. It says, "On that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of Israel, so that they revered him, just as they had revered Moses all the days of his life." So this is, God here is proving that Joshua is the one he has chose to lead them. Just as he was with Moses, he will be with you, Joshua. So, as mentioned, God was speaking in verse 7, and Joshua was speaking in verse 10. There's something else that's mentioned. This, something is stated about God. And I think that was, it states that he is a living God. Maybe that was in 4:24. But it is stated that, as verse 10 is what I'm looking for, Joshua 3:10, that God was referred to as a living God. And then in verse 11, it says, "The Lord of all earth." And also in verse 13, we see that in verses 11 and 13, it states that this is the living God, the Lord of all earth. And Joshua also says to the sons of Israel, he stated, "You shall know that the living God, this God that he's talking about. He's among you. He's among them. So this is describing he's with them. It's describing favor. And then the end of the verse says, and that he will assuredly dispossess from before you the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Hivite, the Perizzite, the Girgashite, the Amorite, and the Jebusite. So again, this idea that God is with you and you will have success because he's the one that allows the success. So how are they to know? Now, in verse 9, it tells them to, let's read it. It says, then Joshua said to the sons of Israel, come hear and hear the words of the Lord your God. So Joshua tells them to come and to hear the words of the Lord. But these things that they have already seen, these were signs that proved who he was. Even in verse, like we looked at in verse 7, it says that in the sight of all Israel, that they may know because of the things that they've seen. These things prove. It's objective evidence. It's not something that they just felt. It's something that was proven to them. So they have seen this. So we'll go down to we'll go over to the next chapter. Unless anybody have any thoughts or comment? Yes, sir, Rocky.
Explanatory. How do you know he's a living God? He's going to demonstrate that. So the second part is really expanding to show how God is a living God. So still kind of get the same message, but if you look at that thing, it could be really just one thing.
Right. And my thought process on that, and I agree that and can be just building upon something. And what I have put on there is the idea because he's with you, you know, he's among you. And that kind of goes back to this living God. But good comments. Yes, sir.
Just one other comment. It says that he's a living God. That's kind of axiomatic. You know, God is living. So there's some sense of what the scripture kind of tells us. How is he a living God? Well, maybe you consider that he's the one that provides one. Israel's got to go in this land. Their life's going to get stained by the enemies.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to unprovide a life. He gives them a living, but living in the sense of giving them a life. Probably he's going to do with the nations that they're about to come.
Well, and also in comparison to the other types of gods of other people, he is living. He has been able to show, and he's proven by the things that he's done, you know, who he is. It's, you know, when you compare their gods were things that they made, but this here is a living God. It's kind of where I'm thinking of with it. But any other thoughts or comments? Or okay. So we can go over to chapter 4. Okay, chapter 4. This is where it's talking about the 12 memorial stones. And Well, first off, what was the purpose? What's stated as the reason or the cause for these stones? What's the purpose of them?
They
would
serve as a memorial.
Okay. So they would serve as a memorial. It's a sign. Verse 6 says, let this be a sign among you so that, you know, when your children ask you later, saying, what do these stones mean to you? And we see a similarity in verse 21. But it says in verse 7, so you shall say to them, these stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever. And then in verses 22-24, again it says, then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. So it is to be a sign or something to remind them of this God and his might and his power and the things that have been done. And remember, these are things that not only are these people seeing this, some of the other things in the past, we saw in chapter 2 that others were hearing of things that were going on too. So this might and this power of this God is being shown, and then therefore others are being able to hear about this. But that's what these were for. This was for a memorial. That's your hand? Yes, sir.
They also represented, you read verse 8 of chapter 4, they represented the 12 tribes of Israel.
Yes, that's the purpose of the 12 stones? Yes, sir. Yeah, that is to represent the 12 tribes. And that is true. I actually had that on my notes. And so one stone was to be for each tribe that had crossed. Now, I put on here, where were these stones set up? Where were these stones set up that they were talking about here? Okay. That's not incorrect. The reason why I say this, because when I'm reading, well, because you'll notice on my next questions, it says, is there only one set of 12 stones mentioned? And I could be, remember, this is what I'm getting from it. I could be way out there. I'm seeing two different things. First, let's talk about the stones here. Let's go to verse 20. Okay, let's start at verse 19. So now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. So, remember, Gilgal is where they had came, or I'm working backwards here. So they after they had crossed, that is where they had camped. So these stones are being set up at Gilgal, from what I'm understanding, but there is reference of the 12 stones that are in the middle also. That's why I'm posing the question, are there two sets of stones?
There sure seems to be. It's very clear at verse 3. He says, you lay them in the lodging where you will lodge Shunammi.
Okay.
And verse 8, at the end of the verse, they carried them over with them to the lodging place and put them down there. And then we're caught unexpectedly with verse 9.
Yes.
I do not know if God gave separate instructions to Joshua. As far as I know, I've not been able to find any more data on it. But clearly, he set some 12 stones. Now, in the middle, you compare verses, some say in the midst. It doesn't mean right in the middle of the river necessarily.
I've read
it. Could be on the edge where the feet were, so that people could see the stones. And midst will carry that connotation. But here's stones that were set up by the river itself. Don't have any more data on those except that, but it sure seems like it. I'll come to take the food you did, but there's two sets of 12 stones.
Okay. Okay, I didn't know if I was going way out there, but that's what, at least from what I was reading, it's definitely, it seems like it's talking about two different places, because it says Gilgal, and then it also says in the midst or the middle of the river, so we see this taking place, and pardon me, we also, let's keep in mind also how this was taking place. So, because again, this is, so they have to go gather these stones. So basically, the priests are going to go back out here in the water, wherever it is. That water, I mean, because we know because of the season, the water is high. It's over the banks. So wherever that is, water is having to be stopped. Okay, it's being held up, and these guys are coming to dry land, and they're getting stones wherever, if they're gathering it to take to Gilgal, or the ones that they're placing somewhere in the river. Let's remember what this is representing, and what I mean by that is, let's remember, I mean, think about that. Is this something you see every day? This isn't talking about something that is just easy to think, there's no big deal. They just walked out there and got some rocks. And this is evidencing and showing, again, the power and the might of this God, His ability. Nothing restricts Him. I mean, He can defy what would normally not take place. You know, He can make things like that happen. And just like it references when out of Egypt, when they cross the Red Sea, He can dry it up and make a pathway. So this is the might and the power of this living God. So just something we need to continue to emphasize and to think about.
Eric?
Yes, sir.
I know. How many of us have ever been to a spring and tried to set rocks up? A stack. Setting 12 rocks. These must have been pretty good sized rocks by the time you got to the top. And he said that it's been memorial so that when your children ask their fathers. So it was God's intent for fathers to either make a trip there or something. They could have taken a picture on their iPhone and showed to their kids. And your children ask their father. You have to wonder how many fathers took the time and made the effort to take their children and say, look at these rocks. There's 12 of them. Why 12? Stack one on top of the other. What did that mean? I don't know. But I know in the book of Judges, read about a generation that didn't know the Lord because their fathers failed to train them. So God made man. He gave us memory. He knows the power of memory. And He established memorials.
Yeah.
We have that with the rainbow in the sky early on. We have it here. We'll have it when they get into the Exodus and the Passover. And today we're on the first day of the week to observe an appointed memorial. So God established that we use our memories for that purpose, and that fathers take the time and make the effort to teach their children the significance of these.
Yes, sir. Good points. Good points. These things that are brought out for us to use, to be reminded, and to teach, use to teach. And like what you were mentioning with the stacking of the stones, yeah, because you think about it, there's nothing being used to keep them together. I mean, there's no mortar or anything like that as far as it shows, because there doesn't need to be, because this is, God said, do this, you go do it, it's going to happen. So as long as you're listening to Him, you're following His instructions, you go and do it, it'll work. So they go and they stack these stones, and like you said, once the current comes back, what's going to keep that? I mean, current of the water would knock something over. So it's interesting when you consider things. Consider at least how we normally think of how things work, just because how we see it in normal everyday sense. That's the point of some of these things. This isn't normal. This is the power of God. So, any other thoughts, comments? Oh, okay. Okay, so we will go. Let's see here. Okay, in chapter 5, so we see here it's going to talk about this new generation, this circumcision. Before we get to that, let's look at verse 1. It says, now it came about when all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard. So they're hearing this. They heard how the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan before the sons of Israel until they had crossed. So remember again, like I mentioned, these things that are taking place, it shows something to the sons of Israel, but it also it shows something to the people around them. So they heard how the Lord had dried up these waters of the Jordan before the sons of Israel, so that they could cross. And when they heard this, it describes that their hearts melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the sons of Israel. To me, this little section doesn't quite fit with what we're about to read in the rest of the verses. But let's remember, these things are these chapters are put there by men. I think it better fits chapter 4 to me, and what we were looking at. And it's not important, I mean, because we see that in different things. There might be points you're making in one chapter, and if you look at the very last verse of the chapter chapter before. It helps explain some of the things that you're talking about. We see that in other places. So that's not a big deal, but I'm pretty sure what it's describing here in chapter 5:1 is because of what we had just looked at in chapter 4, these things that are happening with the water and the way that the people of Israel are able to cross on dry land. So we note that the things they hear are the things that took place, because it is stated that they had heard that what had taken place as Israel was crossing the Jordan and in the manner that they had crossed. So they had heard how the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan before the sons of Israel in order to be able to cross. And then, as we noted, we saw because of this the king's reactions, or the king's plural. Their hearts melted and no spirit left in them. So, fear. And let's jump back to chapter 4 for just a second. Very last verse, chapter 4:24. It stated, it said, all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. So these things that were taking place prove who this God is and His might. And then that brings fear on these kings. We'll stop there. We'll pick up in our next class. We'll finish looking at chapters 3 through 5 in our next class. So, thank you for your comments. Appreciate it.